What would you do if you discovered you had just 100 days left to live? Not in some distant, abstract future, but right now, with the summer still ahead, projects half finished, and conversations you've been meaning to have. This was the reality that crashed into Eugene O'Kelly's life in May 2005. At 53, he was CEO of KPMG, one of the world's largest accounting firms. He had power, influence, and what seemed like endless tomorrows. Then a brain scan revealed the truth. Inoperable tumors, no cure, 3 months at most. Most of us live as though death is a problem for our future selves to solve. We postpone difficult conversations, delay meaningful experiences, and assume there will always be time later. O'Kelly's diagnosis shattered that comfortable illusion. But here's what makes his story remarkable. Instead of collapsing into despair, he approached his final chapter with the same analytical rigor he'd brought to boardrooms. Only now, the project wasn't quarterly earnings, but something infinitely more valuable. He set out to create what he called perfect days, to say proper goodbyes, and to discover what it truly means to be alive when every moment counts. Before diagnosis, O'Kelly embodied the driven executive, constant motion, packed schedules, believing achievement justified sacrifice. He excelled at corporate leadership, genuinely enjoying complex problem solving and guiding thousands through endless meetings and strategic decisions. The cost was steep. Family dinners vanished into conference calls. His daughter's milestones occurred at the periphery of his awareness. Personal joy was postponed to someday, that mythical future when things would slow down. Golf provided his sole refuge. Evening rounds with Corinne, racing against darkness to complete 18 holes, were sacred. On the course, the corporate armor fell away. No emails, no subordinates, just the pure geometry of club meeting ball. He called it chasing daylight, those magical hours when shadows lengthened and the world softened into something almost holy. But even this sanctuary couldn't shield him. During one round, his ball flew wildly off course, unusual for his skill level. Moments of confusion emerged. His typically laser-sharp focus began wavering. These weren't bad days or stress. They were whispers of something darker, warnings he was too busy to hear. Change arrived in small anomalies, poorly aimed golf shots, unexpected confusion, mental fog. Spring 2005 brought mounting chaos for O'Kelly, a home move, endless travel, perpetual running behind. Important moments slipped away. His wife, Corinne, sensed it first. At a YouTube concert, a flash of premonition stopped her breath. Something was wrong. The certainty settled into her bones. Their carefully constructed life stood on the edge of collapse. We're remarkably skilled at ignoring such warnings. A slight facial droop? Must be fatigue. Disorientation? Just jet lag. The mind protects itself from unwelcome truths until denial becomes impossible. By the time O'Kelly sat in the surgeon's office, the evidence was undeniable. Brain scans revealed multiple tumors, necrotic tissue, inoperable. The doctor's words were blunt. There is no cure. Treatment options weren't paths to recovery, but desperate attempts to borrow time. The entire architecture of his future collapsed. Retirement plans, grandchildren he'd never meet, the golden years, all dissolved into something immediate and finite. Yet amid the devastation came one small mercy. Brain cancer typically doesn't cause prolonged suffering. Death involves substantial paperwork. O'Kelly resigned from KPMG methodically, ensuring clarity for the company's future. At home, daughters Marianne and Gina created a cocoon of love. Nighttime brought profound moments. Gina reading John Donne's Death Be Not Proud, its centuries-old defiance resonating with their struggle. These weren't literary exercises, but lifelines connecting them across the chasm opening in their family. When challenges cannot be overcome, O'Kelly redefined success itself. If he couldn't extend his life, he could deepen it. He set three goals: achieve closure with loved ones, maintain heightened awareness, and create perfect moments. With approximately 100 days remaining, he resolved to make at least 30 truly perfect days so fully lived they would contain a lifetime's richness. This represented a radical shift in his relationship with time. Throughout his career, time meant maximizing future gains. Now, the present moment became everything. The question shifted from how much can I accomplish to how deeply can I experience this day? Treatment decisions loomed. Chemotherapy offered possible extension at debilitating cost. O'Kelly chose to forego it, prioritizing quality over quantity. Radiation seemed worthwhile, targeted intervention without overwhelming his final chapter. O'Kelly mapped his relationships in concentric circles, from intimate family to thousands of professional contacts. This revealed a stark pattern. Friends with spiritual depth navigated goodbyes gracefully, while those struggling personally projected their fears onto him. The exercise exposed uncomfortable truths. His fifth circle, thousands of colleagues, had consumed enormous energy, yet delivered minimal meaning. Professional relationships that once seemed crucial now appeared peripheral, while family bonds and deep friendships emerged as life's true anchors. These goodbyes became opportunities for reflection and gratitude. By approaching each relationship intentionally, O'Kelly transformed potentially awkward partings into meaningful exchanges that honored shared histories. As physical decline accelerated, O'Kelly turned towards spiritual preparation. Water became his central metaphor, representing continuity between this life and what might lie beyond. Through daily meditation, he created a pathway bridging the known and unknown. The challenge became balancing contradictory impulses, savoring earthly pleasures while preparing for their release. During a boat ride on Lake Tahoe, surrounded by family, he experienced zeroing, a perfect alignment where past and future receded before an expansive present. These moments, where boundaries between self and world dissolved, became more frequent as illness progressed. As physical capabilities diminished, connections with loved ones took on mystical quality. Simple presence, sitting together, holding hands, sharing silence, became as profound as any philosophical discussion. In his final days, O'Kelly declined further medical interventions, choosing comfort and clarity over prolonged struggle. His passing reflected the intentionality of his entire journey, peaceful, conscious, and surrounded by those he loved most. Eugene O'Kelly's journey toward death became a masterclass in living consciously. By approaching mortality with awareness rather than denial, he transformed potential anguish into profound meaning. His experience reveals that the quality of our dying reflects the quality of our living. He ensured practical matters wouldn't burden those left behind. Affairs meticulously ordered, instructions clearly provided, financial matters arranged with characteristic thoroughness. This final act of consideration allowed his family to focus on emotional processing rather than administrative chaos. What can we take from this accountant's final audit? First, awareness of mortality enhances life by clarifying what truly matters. Second, presence, fully experiencing each moment rather than constantly projecting toward the future, is the secret to both living well and dying well. Finally, relationships, when tended with intention, provide the most meaningful context for our brief journey. We don't need a terminal diagnosis to begin living this way. O'Kelly's story poses an uncomfortable question. What are you waiting for? Which conversations are you postponing? Which moments are you racing past? His legacy resides in the example he set, facing life's ultimate challenge with grace, consciousness, and love, chasing not just daylight, but the luminous moments that make our brief time here truly worth living.